I don't think so, but I'll check.
I think there must be work on ductwork or something.
Okay.
Resonating through the building.
Did you get this from Jennifer? She has her title says what?
Building's falling apart. If we're not careful, it's gonna look like 1400.
Yeah.
Got a better view than we do.
Hi, Robert.
Hi, Robert.
You're mute, man. You need to unmute.
I'm mute?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm right down there.
Oh, yeah, darn. Here we go. Two minutes. Oh, we did this the other day.
Yeah, you're gonna need to mute or something.
Trying to figure out which one is on. Oh, here it is.
It's got two separate speakers on this thing.
Okey-dokey. How many total? Can you see, Amanda?
Mm-hmm. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. I've got some phone numbers, but I don't know who they're at.
Okay, Scott Donald, I know.
13, 12, including Amanda. And the record feature's going on my end.
What was that? What was that, Amanda?
I have it recorded. Let them know that it's being recorded.
Okay.
It's on.
The meeting?
Yeah.
Okay.
The
meeting recording. Okay. All right. 1 minute. All right, folks, it's 10 o'clock. We're gonna get started with a roll call vote. I'll go ahead and read off the members' names, and then I'll also need to record all the guests in attendance. The meeting is being recorded. So can you all hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so I'm gonna start with the roll call vote. Chairman Matt Reed.
I got it.
Vice Chair Chief Solberg.
I'm here.
Alistair Adele.
Leslie Lament on behalf of Alistair Adele.
Great. Thanks, Leslie. Chief Alanise. Chief Alanise? I thought I saw him.
He's muted.
I thought I saw him.
Okay. He's muted. All right. Joe Brocious.
I'm here.
All right. Sheriff Dedman. Director Eric Jorgensen. Is Susan on the phone? Susan Trask? Director Heston Silbert.
Major Jack Johnson sitting in.
Great. Sheriff Penzone. Deputy Chief Morris, are you there? All right. Robert Smith.
Here.
Kent Volkmer. Brian Wright. Six. We have six members present. We need one more. Matt Reed, is he calling?
Yeah, I talked to him this morning.
So okay.
Yeah.
Do we have Matt on the phone? Matt Reed? Okay. Well, we'll wait. Let's go ahead. If you're a guest, please state your name.
Again?
Yes. Matt.
Matt
I'm sorry, it's Matt. I hit star six too early, I guess, to unmute.
Okay, perfect. You're here. Seven. So we have seven.
So we have a quorum?
We have a quorum, yes.
This is Brian, I'm here.
Brian Wright, great. And yes.
Scott Donald on behalf of the Attorney General's Office.
Great, thanks, Scott. All right. Okay, guests in attendance, if you can just state your name. I don't know how to do that the best way.
So it's Scott Green here.
Great, thanks, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else?
Paulette Nye with the task force.
Great, thank you.
Misty Fox from Maricopa County Attorney's Office.
Great, thanks, Misty. Anyone else?
Steven Bird with DPS, our CIO.
Great. Anyone else?
Frank from Maricopa County Attorney's Office.
Great, thanks, Frank.
Matthew Ashton, Pima County Attorney's Office.
Great, anyone else?
Yvette LaPaz County, and Tori will be joining after her 10 o'clock.
Great. Anyone else we didn't get? Susan Trask.
Morning, Susan Trask is on.
Great, thanks, Susan. Okay, all right. All right, Mr. Reed, we have nine members present. So to start the meeting, so.
Should Great. We go ahead and do a formal roll call then?
We did that, maybe before you were okay. on the phone. Yep.
Okay.
So if anyone else joins, we should be able to see. And
I'm gonna remind them it's recorded.
Yeah. And yeah, the meeting's being recorded, so. All right, I'm gonna turn it over to Director McGuffin, and I will see you later.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good morning. Mr. Chairman, I guess at this point it would actually be yours to call the meeting to order if it hasn't been and go through whatever you want to start with.
Okay, let's do that. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order. First order of business is to review and approve the meeting minutes from March 13th. Do I have a motion to do that?
This is Mike. I make a motion to approve.
Second, this is Robert Smith.
So first and second, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, we'll go ahead and move on. If I can now turn it over to Executive Director McGuffin.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, good morning. I want to start out with just a few of the things that are happening within the agency. First, a comment on the kind of our situation since the last time we met, shortly after our last board meeting in mid-March. We departed this building, and this is the first time I believe the five of us from staff have actually been in the building at the same time. We pop in from time to time to dock our laptops and grab some reports here and there, but this is the first time that we've actually been together. I wanted just to comment when we had to kind of basically depart the building, we were able to just grab our laptops and walk out the door, and because of the infrastructure that had been kind of put in place before my arrival here, which was laptops and docking stations and all of our files in appropriate Google Drives and such, we were really able to just pick up and leave and continue operations immediately. And that was not the case for a lot of state agencies. A lot of agencies struggled with the communication aspect and going to, you know, being able to transition to telework. But through the efforts of Frank Ceballos and others in the staff who really had things where they needed to be before, without really having this in mind, it really worked out well for us, and staff has been able to carry on the functions of the AATA in a relatively seamless manner. So I'd just like to acknowledge the people that have the staff work that's been done prior to this. Additionally, over the last couple months, there's been a couple personnel changes that I wanted to inform the board about. Amanda O'Halloran was our administrative assistant, and she's still with us, but we have reclassified her to the position of outreach coordinator. When I arrived here, we took a look at what she does for the agency and tried to determine if she was classified correctly within the proper job classification. We originally got word from ADOA HR that she was okay. But the longer that I was here, the more I saw that there was just disparity between what the job description said she was doing and what she was actually doing. So I took it to them again for a second review. This time they agreed, and so now she is an outreach coordinator, and the functions of that classification are much more in line with what she does for the agency. So we were happy with that change. The next change is we weren't nearly as happy with, which was Frank Ceballos has accepted a job with the new agency, with the Department of Insurance and Financial Institutions, DIFI. It's not altogether bad news for us because the most important things that Frank does for the AATA, he will continue to do. So in June, starting June 1st, I entered into an interagency service agreement with the Department of Insurance, where we are sharing Frank for this month, the month before we actually transition and become part of DIFI. So about roughly 75% of Frank's time is actually spent doing DIFI work, and then 25% is doing AATA work. That will continue as we enter, as we transition over to DIFI. And the important part of that to us is that Frank does some things that that we really need him to continue to do, and it's mainly in the area of financial support, where he works with Art and becomes that Art's second, kind of a checks and balance, if you will, to where Art doesn't have sole responsibility for the budget. We incorporate another person in there. So Frank will continue on with that work. Frank also does a lot of work with our Watch Your Car program, and he's going to discuss that in more detail today because there's been some changes in that program. But what he does is important that he assists Amanda with. So we think this is going to be good for Frank in career development and such with DIFI, and then we still get the benefit of having him associated with our agency. The next thing is consolidation. As you know, we've been in consolidation efforts for at least 8 or 9 months now, really. And the Department of Insurance and Financial Institutions is still currently without a full-time director. Christina Corrieri remains the interim director. There's no word yet on when a director is going to be named. But of course, the work of transitioning everybody into one agency continues. Over the last few months, probably in addition to just all the little details that go into that to make this happen, we've been really engaged in developing a strategic plan along with the three agencies that will be, you know, forming DIFI. So that has occurred. That has been submitted, and the Auto Theft Authority has a portion of that in the form of metrics that we will be reporting on. The other part was that in July, we were supposed to move over to the ADOA building where DIFI is located. That looks like that's been put on hold now. And the reason is because that building is largely vacated. And so some of the build out that was going to occur to allow us to go into a space over there has not occurred. Again, they're still not wanting people in the building, so it just didn't really work out. So we intend to pay the rent for the next year here, even though we don't anticipate being here for a year. So it looks like in discussions with ADOA that we could be here another 6 months or so, but we're, you know, I think it's with the ever-changing environment that we're in, we're going to just continue to kind of play it by ear, and we'll move when everybody is ready for us to move. The next thing is the contract compliance review. We talked about this at the last meeting. This is that internal program where we're going to review compliance with our grant contracts with certain grantees. And in March, I was asked for if there was a narrative of that program. And so I wrote that up, and it's included in your packet. It's a memorandum to Chairman Reed from me. It describes the provisions of that program. It also has some attachments on forms that we intend to use. So that should hopefully give you an outline of what we intend to do. It's going to kick off really in July and August. I think we'll see that starting to come to fruition. We're pretty much ready to go at this point. The important thing for us to do will be to pilot it, and Maricopa County Attorney's Office has agreed to be the, I guess, the guinea pig on it. So we'll be working with Maricopa County in the coming months. And then at the last meeting, we had set a date for the new board member orientation. That was supposed to happen in late April. Of course, we had to cancel it, and we have we are yet to reschedule that meeting because it's my desire to do that meeting in person. I know we could do it electronically, but I think that especially given the last couple of months of doing things electronically, you end up giving away a little bit of what's really good to have in a live meeting, which is the engagement of the audience and the ability to answer questions and ask questions, and also the just the networking aspect of what can occur when things are live. So it's my intent to not name the meeting date yet. We're going to play it by ear and see how things progress in the next month or so. I realize that there's a shelf life to this. We want to get the new members oriented as quickly as we can, but we still think that there's a lot of benefit in doing it live. So the other aspect of that, I think, that is an advantage to waiting is that we are making progress on with DPS on our database, and there could be a possibility that we could actually be utilizing very current data at that meeting, as opposed to right now, if we brought people together, we would still be talking about 2018 data. So again, there's an advantage to waiting on several different fronts. So that's what our intent is at this point. And then kind of this, speaking of the stolen vehicle database, there's been significant progress made on that. On the agenda today is a grant request and an interagency service agreement that will come before the board for a vote. So I will kind of conclude my remarks on the database because I'm going to cover it in more detail during that aspect. So with that, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, that concludes my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McGuffin. I too am supportive of postponing the new board member orientation for the reasons you've stated. I think that a lot of the value will be lost if we can't include some of the kind of, you know, networking type opportunities that present themselves in person. So thank you for that. I also wanted to say that I've had the opportunity to look at the contract compliance review, and I think we're right on target with that. I appreciate you bringing in Hinefield Meech to give us guidance on that, And I think that your introduction to that is, you emphasize the importance, and I think it's an important distinction between this as essentially compliance with the grant as opposed to an audit. So thank you for your work on that, and I think it's important that we go ahead and implement that to come into mainstream with best practices for grant programs. So thank you for your work on that.
You're welcome.
With that, can we turn it over to Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, just have a couple of items to go through. The first item will be the financial report through May 31st of this year. I believe everyone should have a copy of that with their packets. The first schedule I'd like to go over would be schedule number one. This is the fund balance report. The beginning balance at the start of the fiscal year was $4.4 million. Income through the end of May was $6.8 million. Expenditures through the end of May, $5.1 million. And that left us with a fund balance, this is the last line, line 12, of $6.1 million of fund balance. Schedule two is the revenue schedule. Line one was the current year collections, $6.7 million. Line eight was the investment income at the end of May, $94,000. And once again, that left us with a total income of $6.8 million. Line 12, investment with the state treasurer as of May 31st was a little over $6 million. And the rate of return, the current yield for the 1 month was 1.16, and the year to date, 1.99. So those are dropping a bit from where they were initially at the start of the year. Schedule 2.1 is just a revenue analysis. This really hasn't changed since the last board meeting. We did have an additional $62 come in May to top off the collections, and that would completed our collections. All the insurance companies are accounted for, and there's none outstanding. Schedule 3 is just a breakdown of by the appropriation. I won't go through that one line by line. I will take a look at Schedule 4. This is an activity summary. And Schedule 4, Line 2, the administrative expenses through the year, this is out of the lump sum, $316,000. Line 3, public awareness, $215,000. And that gave us a total of the lump sum expenditures, Line 5, $531,812. The grant programs, Line 7, the task force, they were granted $3.6 million of this year. Vertical prosecution, Line 8, $930,942. Law enforcement, line 9, $2,800. Public awareness, line 11, $9,600. And that gave us total grant expenditures of $4.5 million, almost $4.6 million. Total expenditures to date, $5.1 million. And the last two lines, line 16 and 17, line 16 is our ratio of admin cost to income. We're capped at 10%. And currently, through the end of May, we're at 4.62%. Line 17 is just our administrative expense as a percent of total expenses, and through the end of May, we were at 6.17%, so well within tolerances for that. Schedules 5 through 9 just break down individual areas. I won't go through those schedules individually. The only other schedule on this packet for the financial report I'd like to just review quickly will be schedule number 10. That's the non-appropriated funds, Sims Metal Management. And at the March meeting, if you can remember, we had a zero balance for that fund. Unfortunately, with all that's gone on the last couple of months, we had a conference in Laughlin canceled, and we had some refunds come back. So for this particular fund, we had a refund as the conference was canceled. And once again, we have a $1,432 balance in that fund as we conclude FY20. And hopefully we'll be able to get some training if everything works out to get trained next year and maybe eliminate that fund. We've been trying for about 7-8 years. We had it done, but unfortunately we had a couple refunds. So $1,432 in that particular fund. The next schedule for FY20 is just our spending plan, Schedule 11. And everything is on track for the spending plan. A couple of things, if you look over at the grant section, we have about $14,000 left in grants for the fiscal year, and we'll be hopefully using that as part of the payment for the database with DPS. The projected fund balance at the end of the year, be line 27 in the June column, about $6,061,000, so just a little over $6 million is projected for the end of the year. And that basically takes us through FY20. I do have one additional schedule, FY21, that's schedule 11A. That is a projected spending plan to get us through FY21. What I did on this one, I used the grant numbers that the subcommittee had approved. So this spending plan will be correct if the board follows suit and approves the grants in the level that the subcommittee did. And the other thing that I wanted to point out was for this year on our revenue, we're going to keep it flat. We're not really sure what the impact of all the coronavirus will have on the economy. And instead of making our normal 3% projection, which we have done for the last decade or so, we've had about 3% growth rate average, we're going to keep this one flat. And if everything works out okay, we'll be relatively close. The only comparable time that we've had was during that Great Recession back in 08, 09, and 010. And we didn't go negative in those years. We stayed pretty flat. And so we thought that was the best avenue to approach for this year. So we're looking at about $6.7 million to collect. So if we'd make our collections and we complete our expenditures that we'd hope to, that would leave us at the end of fiscal year 21 with a fund balance. And this is line 27 over in June again. That would leave us with about a almost $7.6 million fund balance by the end of 21. Are there any questions on any of the schedules, the financial report, or the spending plan? And Mr. Chairman, I think once we get through the grants and the board has officially approved the grants, I'd like to go and come back and get the board to give an approval on the spending plan for FY21 so we can at least execute as we start the new fiscal year in a couple weeks. But I'll be happy to answer any questions on any of the schedules or the spending plan.
Mr. Meyer, thank you. I was wondering that myself as far as the grants, and when we go through those and come back to the spending plan, I assume that that's something that we would have to ratify.
Correct.
Okay. And the only other commentary I had was Sims, the fund that won't die.
Exactly. We're trying. We'll keep working on it.
I wish my other accounts had the live, you know, nine lives of them.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the last item currently is the annual CPA audit. We have contacted Heinfeld Meach, and we have signed an engagement letter for them to do the annual audit that they normally conclude with, and then they will produce financial reports and statements, and they normally will come at our November meeting and give a brief report on their findings, if any. So we haven't gotten started yet. We just got the engagement letter out. I would expect to start the actual audit work probably in late July, and that takes a couple of months to kind of go through everything with all the documents and then for them to do their reports. The total cost for this year's audit is $8,000. I believe last year was about $7,500 or so, it went up a little bit, but not too bad. And we enjoy working with Heinfeld Meach. They've been very professional, and they're very easy to work with. And I think even with the kind of conditions we're on these days, with the COVID-19 and the remote working, I think it'll go pretty good. I think we'll do well, and I think the audit will go good. So I just wanted to report on that. And with that concludes this part of my report. If there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Mr. Meyer, the only question I had I know that we regularly use Heinfeld Meach. Was there any thought at looking at other vendors just for competition's sake?
Yes, there was. We looked at the, I was part of the committee that selected the auditors for the state last year, And Heimfeld Meats gives us, I think, the best bang for our buck, if you will. They're relatively inexpensive in relation to some of the other auditing firms. And we felt it was just better to kind of stick with what we had been using. But I understand the point of not getting familiarity with an audit firm. The one thing about Heimfeld Meats, we have the same audit firm, but not the same auditors. So we get different auditors pretty much every year. So that does help. But yeah, I did look at other audit companies, but I thought they gave us the best avenue to go ahead and get the audit completed in a timely manner. One thing to consider once you bring in another audit firm and you're starting from scratch is it's very time consuming to go through all the procedures that are entailed, and it does sort of increase the cost a bit. And Heimfeld Meats is relatively familiar with what we do and how we do it, so it tends to make for a smooth audit. But you're correct. We do look at the audits and not to have the same company every year. But for this year, I thought it was the best to stick with Heimfeld Meats.
I appreciate your diligence on that. Any other commentary before we move on? Okay, thank you, Mr. Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's move on to public awareness with Ms. Armstrong.
Thanks, Hart. Watch out. All right, Mr. Chair, members. As you've heard a little bit from Art and Mr. McGuffin, we've been busy with the fiscal year 21 grants. I'm also working with the agencies to close out their fiscal year 20 grants, looking at final carry forward balances, if any. We don't anticipate there will be. Once the fiscal year 21 grants are approved, I'll begin sending out contracts to the task force and the vertical prosecution grantees, probably next week. We had, during our COVID quarantine time, we received notice from the folks over at AZ Family that the Gilbert PD public awareness grant that we funded in November 2019 won a Telly Bronze Award, so for their Lock It or Lose It campaign, and it was under the craft humor category. So congratulations. That their spot was also entered into the Emmy Awards, which won't come out until later this year, but the folks that worked on it, Vicki Faber, Danielle Covey, Eric Snow, Tiffany Graff, the folks from Gilbert PD really did a great job with that. So I wanted to acknowledge that and the good work of Chief Solberg's folks. As Jamie mentioned, we have a new process, or the MVD has switched their computer system after decades of talking about the upgrade. So that recently happened, I think it was about mid-April, April 20th or so. So I'm gonna turn it over to Frank, who will talk about what that new program looks like for our Watch Your Car members.
Thank you, Ann. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. I'm very excited today to talk to you about the Watch Your Car program. Like Ann just said, back on April 20th, the Motor Vehicle Division launched their new MVD Now system. We were able to incorporate the Watch Your Car program enrollment and unenrollment from that program into that new system. That replaced our 20-year-old database that was beginning to fail. The new MVD Now system is making enrollment and unenrollment to the Watch Your Car program easier for our consumers and is saving time for AATA staff. This is the part that gets really exciting. In 2 months, we've had over 1,000 vehicles registered in the Watch Your Car program. We usually average about 350 vehicles each year. So we're seeing a huge increase in enrollment into the Watch Your Car program since we moved over to the new MVD Now system. We are very grateful to MVD and all their work that they have done on this project. It is just really exciting to see how many people are interested in the Watch Your Car program since we moved over to the new MVD Now. So that concludes my report. Do you have any questions? Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time. I'll turn it back over to Ms. Armstrong.
Hey, can I ask a question? I'm sorry.
Sure.
So I'm new, I'm Sue Trask, I'm with MVD, and I started at the end of January. So this this is the first time I'm attending one of these meetings, so I'm really just trying to understand what it's about. So your Watch Your Car program, what exactly is that?
Sure. So the Watch Your Car program is a volunteer program where you can register your vehicle, letting officers know that you do not operate your vehicle between the hours of 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., and your vehicle is not going to be within 1 mile of the international border. If they see your vehicle, you're giving officers consent to stop your vehicle to see if that vehicle has been taken without your consent. They're able to run the plate, and that will give them a code, so they're able to see that your vehicle is registered in the program. And then they can call you to make sure that you have given consent to the person that's driving it.
Oh, okay. You know what? I do recall, because I think that I do recall hearing about it. I didn't know if that's what it was called. Okay. Very good. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Any other questions? All right. Anne?
I think that concludes my report, Mr. Chair and members, unless you have any questions. I think we'll move into the law enforcement subcommittee report to do the grant approvals. Am I doing that, Art? Or you? Okay. Yeah. Chief Solberg, if you want to defer to staff to go over your subcommittee recommendations, just kind of, we'll do it the same order that we did for the law enforcement subcommittee.
Yes. Yes, please.
Okay.
And then once we review it, we can approve them in those groups as well. And if anyone has any conflict of interest, just let us know so we can pull that individual grant out before we vote on it.
Perfect. All right.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I'd like to go through the grant requests for FY21, and mainly that'll be the task force and the vertical prosecution grants. And we'll essentially do, I believe, the same way we did for the subcommittee last week. First thing, and everyone should have, or hopefully has, a memo that will cover the 21 task force and vertical prosecution grants with staff and subcommittee recommendations. The first thing I just want to briefly cover is what our budget looks like for FY21, and for those that have been on the board for any length of time, it looks exactly the same as it has for the last 4 or 5 years. Operating lump sum next year, $654,400. Once again, the task force was line itemed at $3,650,000. Local grants, and local grants is where the vertical prosecution will come from. Local grants was listed at $957,700. Reimbursable program is $50,000. The total appropriation for the Auto Theft Authority FY21, $5,312,100. Now, the vertical prosecution, the breakdown, the way it will work as the board approves is, the staff is going to recommend approving $930,942 for vertical, and that leaves only $26,758 in the remaining local grants. That would have to cover all the grants that we'd have for the rest of the year, being law enforcement, to public awareness, any of that. So anyway, as we go through, let me go ahead and break down the individual grants. The first grant will be the task force, and I believe, Mr. Chairman, we'll cover the task force first, and then the board can approve the grant, and then we'll move on to the vertical. That's how we did it at the subcommittee. So if that's okay with you, that's how we can proceed. The first grant is the task force. The grant number is 1884. Now, I want to briefly just go over what they requested in FY20 and what was approved. FY20, the task force requested $4.8 million. The actual board approval for FY20 was the line item $3.65 million. So the board approval is $3.65 million. And unfortunately, with the line item for the task force, you don't have the kind of flexibility that you might have if they just gave us a number and let you kind of manipulate around that. You're kind of stuck with the 3.65. The FY21 request was for $5.1 million. And once again, the line item for the task force for FY21 is $3.65 million. So at this point, the staff recommendation was to fund the grant, as the line item indicated, at $3.65 million. The subcommittee also recommended that we fund the grant at the line item $3.65 million. Mr. Chairman, if there's any discussion, this would be a good time for the task force. If not, I guess the board could vote to approve the task force grant at this time.
Any discussion? I don't hear any, so do I have a motion to approve grant number 1884?
This is Mike. I'll make a motion to approve grant 1884.
Second.
And I'm sorry, who's seconding?
Robert Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. So motion and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
This is Major Jackson with DPS. I'm going to recuse on this one.
Okay, thank you, Major. Any opposed? Okay, it's approved.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll go through the verticals, and I think the way we did this with the subcommittee was to go through the entire list of verticals and then take them as a group to approve or any discussion that the board might want. Vertical prosecution,
FY... Are we okay on a quorum basis to do that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, because we will need a couple of people to recuse themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, the vertical prosecution breakdown for FY20 and FY21 is very similar. For FY20, the total requested was $1.1 million, and the board approved funding in an amount of $930,942. For this year, FY21, the requested amount was $1,067,000. The staff recommendation is once again going to be $930,942. And essentially what we had to do, it was just recommend to the board and the subcommittee that the vertical prosecution grants be funded at the same level in FY21 that they were in FY20. Unfortunately, we just don't have a lot of flexibility to increase the grant funding at this time. The first actual grant for FY21 is the Pinal County Attorney's Office. That's grant number 1881. And for FY20, the board approved funding for one attorney, one paralegal. The total amount funded for Pinal was $169,060. The FY20 request is pretty much the same. They want funding, they're requesting funding for one attorney, one paralegal. Attorney's salary is $93,000. Paralegal salary is $43,000. ERE for both, $46,000. Their total grant request was $182,907. And once again, the staff recommendation and the subcommittee recommendation was to fund at the same level that we did in FY20. So the staff recommendation and subcommittee recommends funding at the level of $169,060 for the Pinal County Attorney's Office. The second grant agency is the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. That's grant number 1887. In FY20, the board approved funding for two attorneys and half a paralegal. The total funding approved for FY20, $235,751. The FY21 request for Maricopa County is basically the same. Two attorneys, and they're requesting two paralegals, half of each. The one attorney salary, $65,000. Attorney two salary, $63,000. Total attorney salary, $128,000. And the paralegal salaries for both, $55,000. The total ERE for all the requests for the attorneys and the paralegals, $74,000, and the total grant request for Maricopa County, $258,633. And once again, the staff and the subcommittee recommendation was to fund at the same level in FY21 that we did in FY20. Staff recommendation, subcommittee recommendation, $235,751 for Maricopa County. Pima County Attorney's Office, grant number 1882. FY20, the board approved funding for two attorneys and one paralegal, and the total amount funded was $216,056. The grant request for FY21 is pretty much the same. They're requesting two attorneys and one paralegal. basically three full-time FTEs, and they do a little differently. They have one attorney that's hired full-time, and they the other attorney is drawn out of the Community Protection Bureau, and they will fund one full attorney out of that group as it goes through the year. Attorney and paralegal salaries, $184,000. Attorney and paralegal ERE, $53,000. Total grant request for FY21 for Pima County, $238,187. And once again, the staff recommendation and the subcommittee recommendation was to fund the grant for the Pima County attorney at the same level in 21 that we did in 20. That would be at $216,056. Next agency is the La Paz County Attorney's Office. That's grant number 1878. FY20, the board approved funding for one attorney and one legal assistant. Total approved amount was $119,714. The FY21 grant request is funding, requesting pretty similar, one attorney, one legal assistant. Attorney salary in the area, $85,000. Legal assistant salary, $43,000. Total grant request, $128,846. And once again, the subcommittee and staff recommended that the grant for the La Paz County attorney be funded at the same level in FY21 that it was in FY20, that'd be $119,714. Next grant agency is the Mojave County Attorney's Office. That's grant number 1879. FY20, the board approved funding for one attorney and one legal secretary. That's a partial funding for the legal secretary. The total approved funding was $109,566. The request from Mojave County for FY21 is once again one attorney and one paralegal or office assistant, a partial. The attorney salary, $84,000. Paralegal or office specialist salary, $15,000. That's a partial. And the attorney and paralegal ERE, $42,000. Their total grant request, $142,619. And once again, the staff recommendation and the subcommittee recommendation was to fund the grants at the same level in FY21 that they were in FY20. For this agency, $109,566 is the recommendation. And the last agency to request vertical prosecution funding is the Santa Cruz County Attorney's Office, grant number 1888. In FY20, the board approved funding for one attorney, and actually it was partial funding, about 70% of one attorney, and the board approved funding in $80,795. FY21 request is virtually identical. They want funding, requesting funding for one attorney, and the total grant request for the one attorney, including ERE, was $116,114. Once again, the staff recommendation, the subcommittee recommendation, is to fund at the same level in FY21 that we did in FY20. That'd be $80,795. And that represents about 70% of their grant request, which was the same amount that we had in FY20. And just to kind of finish up, with the if the board approves the funding at the levels recommended by the staff and the subcommittee, that would bring total vertical prosecution funding for FY21 to $930,942. And once again, that will leave us $26,758 to fund the remaining law enforcement, public awareness, and professional training programs throughout FY21. It doesn't give, unfortunately, it doesn't give the board and the subcommittee a whole lot of flexibility as far as increasing the funding for any particular agency. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation. If the board would like to discuss these or vote however you think you want to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Meyer. Is there any discussion regarding these grants? I don't hear any. So do I have a motion to approve grant numbers 1881, 1887, 1882, 1878, 1879, and 1888?
This is Mike. I make motion to approve it as you just stated.
This is Robert. Second.
Okay, so the first and the second, all in favor?
Do we have any recusals?
Leslie Lament from the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. I'm just abstaining from the vote on grant number 1887 for Maricopa County. All the rest I approve or agree with.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Mr. Meyer, can we move forward with the discussion on grant number 1889?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I think Director McGuffin would like to come up and say a few words, then we can go ahead and review the grant request.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, grant that I'm going to speak of is kind of running in conjunction with a interagency service agreement that I'm proposing. The grant is actually a DPS grant. They are the requester. The reason I'm here speaking on behalf of it is because it is an AATA initiative. The best way for us to forward this initiative and to make it progress through is to put it in the hands of DPS. Just so you know, there is a DPS representative from the who is Captain Bird, who is in charge of the IT Bureau at DPS. He is on the line and would be available to answer any technical questions that the board may have. So included in your packet today is a document that describes this grant, and it also describes the interagency service agreement that we're proposing. Since we last met in March, there's been several different database meetings that have occurred between the Auto Theft Authority, DPS, and with the authorities in Colorado, from our peer agency, our sister agency in Colorado, and some of their technical people that have worked on the database in Colorado, which we are trying to become part of. Those discussions have centered on, that we've had amongst this group, have centered on capturing the Arizona data, connecting to Colorado, and then eventually being able to share that, all of our information, among all participating states. I would like to also say that DPS has been extremely accommodating throughout this entire process. I met with Lieutenant Colonel Chung, who's in charge of the Technical Services Division at DPS. It is his division that where all of these systems and information technology is housed. And I wanted to get his buy-in, because it's mandatory. Basically, if DPS isn't on board, we'd be pretty much dead in the water on anything that we move forward, because even though the information is not necessarily owned by DPS as it comes in, because it's really owned by all the jurisdictions that contribute to ACIC, DPS coordinates the ACIC system. And so you really needed to get them on board and get the permissions to be able to use the data that's flowing through there. Colonel Chung was completely on board with the process, and has allowed Captain Bird and his staff to work very closely with us so far, and just wanted to say that they have been great to work with. We're currently working with DPS to make the data usable right now. Captain Bird was able to supply us with thousands of records that have been compiled in that system, and unfortunately they're just not in a usable format yet, and I don't think it'll take a whole lot of effort to get them there, but we're meeting next Tuesday with his staff in order to start sorting through that data, being able to filter and cut away things that don't belong or that aren't necessarily useful to us. And we'll get to a point where I think that data is exactly where we need it to be. To that end, ATA is proposing a multi-phase project to accomplish these goals. And we have discovered along the way, in much the same way that Colorado discovered, that there is one glaring deficiency in the information as it's coming into the ACIC, which is the Arizona Criminal Information Center, that is being reported by all of the agencies. And that deficiency is that there is location is not included in what an officer who is reporting a stolen vehicle event or a stolen vehicle recovery, location is not included in the entry screen mask when they enter into that system. So without that location information, it's very difficult to map anything and to look for trends, where are the hot spots. If a vehicle is, you know, stolen in Phoenix, where is it ending up? We'll be able to know that if we were able to know what the location was. So one of our, you know, one of the things that we need to do first is be able to include location in those entry screens. Right now, the only thing that we can do is on a statewide basis would be able to tell you, you know, what jurisdiction reported it. So we might know the total number that occurred in Phoenix or Glendale or Chandler, but we don't know exactly where they're occurring in Phoenix. And with the kind of the urban sprawl that we have in Arizona, the jurisdictions are just too big to make any sense unless we know exact locations. We know that information is available for the most part amongst the agencies. So for example, the city of Phoenix could map their data and they could tell you exactly where things are occurring. But when it comes to combining, you know, all agencies in the East Valley or what's occurring in Page or something like that, we need a system that operates on a statewide basis that we can use all of the information and compile it, as opposed to going from jurisdiction to jurisdiction to jurisdiction to try and make sense of that data. So before we can really create a robust system, we need that ability to really acquire quality information from ACIC. And location is that important data element. So the purpose of today's grant and interagency agreement is just that. It's about location. In my kind of simple way of doing things, I break down our entire project in three different ways. The first one being location, that's the first phase. The next phase would be connection. That would be how we get our data in Arizona into the Colorado system. And there has to be some IT work that allows that data to transfer into that database. And then the third phase of that would be subscription, and that would be where we would join a network eventually, which might be a year or two or more down the line, where we would share information and we would become part of a network of agencies that would probably originate in the southwestern states with New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, Texas, to share information, to find out what's happening within our region. And then eventually, you know, we're all hopeful with a vision toward this a system like this going nationally and possibly even internationally. That's what the architects of the system are considering now. So today, again, the only thing that we're talking about today is location. We're going to forego any discussion on connection and subscription. Those will be handled later down the line. DPS has done a lot of work with us and a lot of work with their vendor who actually does work on the ACIC system. And in order to change that mask, which again is the entry screen that officers or entry data entry people use to put stolen vehicle events or recoveries into the system, in order to change that mask, they're projecting a cost between $60,000 and $65,000. That is the cost of the work, and it also includes a contingency in the event that there's an overrun of hours, you know, needed to do that. So we feel like DPS is pretty confident that $60,000 to $65,000 would cover the addition of location. I will say that I've seen some of the, even though the scope of work is not complete from the vendor, I've seen all of the systems that they have to change, And while it sounds simple to add this to a mask, it's really not. It's more complicated than that because these systems have little, I guess, tentacles, for lack of a better word, that affect other systems, and all of those things have to change. We have to make room for that location data to be added. The total cost today is divided, and it's the grant that DPS is requesting is $14,000. The reason that grant is $14,000 is because that is all the money that we have left to grant. We got some money back this year. I think Mr. Meyer said that there was some money returned because of training that was canceled. So $14,000 would pretty much extinguish all of the money that we have left to grant. The remaining $51,000 would come from money that is internal to the AATA and comes from our administrative fund. Normally, we would have spent that by now. We might have spent that on public awareness, on just some different initiatives that we had, but with COVID-19 and the fact that we really just haven't been spending money, some of that money that we would have normally spent has been saved. So it's been fortuitous for us to sit on this amount of money and be able to potentially provide that to DPS in the form of an interagency service agreement. I will tell you that the revision to ACIC to add location is foundational to the database. If we don't do this, the information, we really can't share it with Colorado, and it's of limited use here in Arizona. It's also worth noting that even if we never move this initiative into the next phase, if we never connected to Colorado, never entered into their database, we still need the location here, and we could use the Arizona data internally. We could share it with law enforcement. We could share it with other stakeholders. So adding location or connecting, I should say, to Colorado or anything else is really not fundamental in what we do today in adding the location to it. This in some ways is just something we need to do in Arizona regardless of how far this process goes. I'd also like to say that any remaining year-end money that we don't spend within the next couple weeks is going to revert to our fund balance. The fund balance we expect to be around a little over $6 million at the end of the fiscal year. So we really, in my estimation, we don't really need additional $50,000 in the fund balance. So being able to ISA that over to DPS and have this type of initiative furthered for the database, I think is good value for the AATA and good value for everyone else. With that, I'm available to answer any questions that you might have. And I would also remind you that Captain Bird is on the line, and if there's any technical questions, I'm sure he would be willing to answer those as well.
Thank you, Mr. McGuffin. Is there any discussion regarding this effort?
Just a discussion of support. We discussed it in the subcommittee meeting, and really excited about getting this. It's long overdue. It's a great idea. So fully support it.
Thank you, Chief. Any other comments? And just to tack on to what the chief said, I agree. This is, in my mind, kind of a quantum leap for the agency to be involved in this and the effort to combat auto theft. So I'm very pleased to see the first steps on this. From a technical standpoint, do we vote on grant 1889 and include the administrative funds in that vote?
Separate.
They're two separate issues?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So do I have a motion to approve grant number 1889?
Is Mike a motion to approve?
This is Robert Smith, second on approving 1889.
It's a first and second. Any, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Major Jack Johnson, all recuse.
Thank you, Major. Any opposed? Okay, 1889 passes. And now for, I'm not even sure how to phrase this, the funding of $51,000 towards this interagency service agreement. Do I have a motion?
Is Mike, I make a motion to approve.
Second, Robert.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Jack Johnson, I will recuse again.
Thank you, sir. Any opposed? Okay, motion carries.
Thank you.
Yeah. And with that, I think we should probably go ahead and circle back to the spending plan from Mr. Meyer. And do I have a motion to ratify the spending plan that is proposed?
Mike Solberg, make a motion to approve as proposed.
Robert Smith, second.
Okay. All in favor of ratifying the spending plan?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so ratified.
Thank you.
Thank you all for your efforts on that. Let's go ahead and move on to public awareness. Mr. Smith?
Public awareness. In regard to automobile theft, nothing to report. We are in strange times, obviously. And so everyone knows what's going on out in public and whatnot. That's it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Smith. For the legislative subcommittee, not to sound like a broken record off of Mr. Smith, but yes, strange times. We were in the midst of, I was working with some lobbyists regarding clarification and hopefully some kind of guideposts about the integration of the Auto Theft Authority into DIFI. Those efforts came to kind of a screeching halt because of the virus and the legislation that we were hoping to invoke kind of died on the vine. And hopefully that will be picked up again in the next legislative session so we can have some more guidance on that. Other than that, I have nothing to report. Vertical Prosecution Subcommittee.
Hi, Leslie Levent on behalf of Alistair Adele for Maricopa County Attorney's Office. This is obviously my first meeting, so nice to quote-unquote meet all of you. And a lot has obviously changed within Maricopa County Attorney's Office. In addition to Ms. Adele becoming our new county attorney, the Auto Theft Bureau is no more as a bureau. We have two designated Auto Theft Task Force vertical prosecutors. They are both on the line. Frank Woods, who is in my bureau, which is the Southeast Valley Bureau, and Jessica Sorensen, who's in a Phoenix Central South Mountain Bureau, whose bureau chief is Clayton Linus. My assistant bureau chief, Missy Faust, who many of you know, she was in Auto Theft for years. She's also on the line. So I know that there are a bunch of other counties who chimed in, so I don't know if the other counties wish to go forward and speak on any particular cases.
I know we have, in addition to your Maricopa County Attorney's Office folks, Leslie, we have Matthew Ashton from Pima County on the line. Is he still on the line? Matt, are you there?
Yes.
Do you
yes.
have anything?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Sorry, getting confused with the muting on meeting.
nothing too much going on here. That obviously with COVID, cases have been moving a bit slower. We had one case that just got sentenced at the end of April. A guy was, he had three different theft of means charges. He had some priors from Pima County for theft of means and some from Maricopa as well. And he was running a chop shop with another individual, and he just got sentenced to a pretty substantial prison term just recently.
Great. Awesome.
And I think there was also somebody on the line from La Paz County.
Yes, La Paz and Pinal County we have. So do we have Yvette and Tori on the phone from La Paz? Can you unmute them?
I can't unmute
you
them.
You can't unmute them?
Star 16.
Are you all still with us from La Paz County?
Hi, this is Yvette. I'm here. I don't have anything to report.
Okay. Thanks, Yvette.
Yvette.
Nick Hartman from Pinal County.
Good morning, Chairman, Board. Yep, this is Nick Hartman with Pinal County. I do have a few things to report. I haven't really seen, shockingly, during COVID, a dip in in-custody arrests or long-form basket cases. I'm still having the same amount of arrests and charging being completed, and Pinal County grand jury was never out. So we've had our grand jury the entire time. So indictments have been coming down on each of those cases, and cases have been moving forward. However, it has, I will echo what one of the other prosecutors said, as far as settlement conferences or trials, those have been halted. So it's kind of the cases have been stacking up, but resolutions have been a little slower. I will note, we just had a defendant, Daniel Lopez. He had a couple priors. He also had a gun in the car with a stolen vehicle. He burglarized that, burglarized the house in order to get that car and led into a high-speed chase. He was sentenced to 10 years Department of Corrections recently. I just had a case, Steak versus Manuel Abeda, which is a task force case that I was working with the task force detectives. We already had a case on him, and the defense attorney indicated to me that he was on the straight and narrow. So when I sent out subpoenas for the trial day, shockingly, the detectives were doing an investigation with the drug task force detectives and busted him the same day that I sent out subpoenas on my trial for in September. So he's looking at a lot of charges, sales and transportation of meth, he had fentanyl, as well as guns in the car. I think I briefly discussed last time Nico Biargo, which is a huge case for the task force. We have a case going all the way back to 2014 that we had a DNA hit on recently, but a lot of his recent cases, including probably the most serious case, occurred at a high school where he was trying to get access to a truck, which the victim was a high schooler, got in that truck, started to drive off as the victim and other high schoolers came out. He had a gun, pointed the gun at several of the high school students. The high school students fled. And he has, like I said, three other cases, auto theft related cases. Did staff the case, we're not doing an offer on that case. So he's either pleading straight up to the court or we're taking all four to trial. And the third case, and I'll make this one quick, as far as it's three co-defendant case, Collins, Long, and Harris. This case is pretty serious. All the defendants are 18 and 19 years old. The victim was within that age range as well. They lured him, the victim, to a house, jumped him, ended up taking his car, his belongings, but before that, made him scan his face in his cell phone, took him to a Chase bank while keeping one of his friends under gunpoint at the house. and making him pretty much empty out his bank accounts, give them the money, or his friend and him would be shot, and then took him back to the victim's residence house and burglarized that house as well. A lot of agencies in play, a lot of great detective work to determine who these three defendants were, because the victim didn't really know any of the defendants. So that's just a props to all the agencies working well together and all the detectives talking to each other. But that's all I got. Thank you very much.
Did we have anyone from Mojave?
Sorry.
Mojave County? No. Sorry, Leslie, what were you going to say?
No, you're fine. I was just going to ask if there were any other counties that were on the line that wanted to present any information, so that's fine.
Okay. Great.
Nobody else? Okay, I just had one from Maricopa. It was prosecuted by Frank Woods, who's one of our new task force prosecutors. He's in my bureau, and it's State v. Amory Bell. It's a task force case led by DPS Detective Marcus Patterson. This case involved a 17-year-old defendant. He stole the victim's car while he was armed with a handgun. And 2 days later, Detective Patterson and some other officers set up surveillance at a motel where they spotted the vehicle and waited for the defendant to come out. He was stopped with several others in the car, as well as three guns in the car. And when he was questioned post-juvenile Miranda, he admitted and said that he did have a gun, but he didn't point it at the victim, but did confirm that the victim could definitely see the gun when he stole her vehicle. He was charged with a Class 2 armed robbery and a Class 3 theft of means. He entered into a no agreements plea. He had no juvenile history, nothing else in his record. And he was placed into our like a juvenile intensive probation program called JPOP with supervised probation. During the pendency of the case, he was in custody for approximately 6 months. During that time, he completed his GED. He's now enrolled in college courses online. And the thought was with prosecution and law enforcement that due to his very young age and his lack of history, that this might give him an opportunity to turn things around before it's too late and become someone that we see routinely. At sentencing, Frank Woods reported that the defendant had a great attitude and is already showing some very promising signs to try to do what he needs to do to not be in the system any longer. And that was it from Maricopa County.
And I think that's
Thank you so much. Do we have any other prosecutors to hear from? Okay, thank you. Let's go ahead and move on to the vehicle theft task force. Is Captain Bettnier on the phone?
Yes. Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Once again, my name is Paul Bettnier. I'm the task force commander for the vehicle theft task force. Since our last meeting, I believe it was March 13th, we had a number of different personnel changes, a number of significant events we'll talk about. We'll start off with the personnel. Currently, we have 10 agencies represented in the task force with a total of 29 personnel. January, we lost Detective Callister, who retired and accepted the position with Motorola. And then you had Detective Henderson, who retired in March and accepted a position with NICB, and we actually kept him on a task force. So while we lost the position, we did not lose his expertise and his skill set, which was great. And he's helping us, the task force, on a different level. We had Detective Greg Lochner, who returned to Maricopa on April 3rd. Detective Nick Davis from Yuma, he accepted a position in their homicide unit, and he was replaced by Detective Ernest Prieto on April 25th. We were able to recover and gain back Detective John Bagley, who returned to the task force on May 16th, and Sergeant Todd Beerson, due to the shortages in their sergeants, he's been recalled by Tucson PD for basically a TDY for 4 to 6 months. To fill the void of their existing supervisors. He's will be supervising a day shift patrol squad on the west side of the West Precinct out of Tucson. Since March 13th, we've had our overall activity is still down due to a number of different issues. One was our loss of personnel, holidays, training, the NICO case, which was pretty much labor intensive, and then the protests since May 29th, where our DPS personnel were tasked and pulled to assist with the protests throughout the state. And many of which did not work basically from March, actually not March, I'm sorry, from May 24th through Wednesday, June 10th, basically 17 days straight without a day off to support our efforts with the protest. Come Monday, they're back to the work. Some of them are still have a little bit of a protest hangover, but you know that's just due to the long hours and the disruption in the work schedule. But since March 13th, we've had 362 stolens recovered with an estimate of over $5 million in assets recovered. We've had 79 arrests. We authored 19 search warrants, recovered 13 weapons, and responded to 543 requests for assistance. Just to compare to, as well as the year-to-date, from January 1st to yesterday, we've had 595 recovered with an estimated value of almost $8 million in assets recovered. We've had 150 arrests to date with 52 search warrants that were authored and served from January. We recovered 39 weapons and responded to 946 arrests. What's interesting to note on some of this is that with our search warrants, this time last year, actually over last year, we had 43 search warrants. So we've even surpassed that during this time by 9 search warrants. And we still have 6 months more to cover in a year. And with our weapons, last year we recovered 10 and we recovered year to date 30 already. So they have been pretty active overall, even though with some of the other issues that were going around. Some of the interesting items to note, we did mention Nico Bjarko, and we started working Nico Bjarko after the October 31st incident, where he did carjack the pickup truck out of Maricopa High School. Detective Lochner from Maricopa, who was assigned to the task force at the time, started working it up. And starting December, we started weekly meetings with the FBI and with Gila River. One of the issues we had was that Nico Bjarko is a tribal member from Gila River, and he resides on the Gila River. And we, as a state, have no legal jurisdiction on Indians in Indian country. And I'm using Indians as a technical term or a legal term that is used by the Fed, so that's how I'm using that. So as an enrolled member, the jurisdictional issues that we had, it was very hard for us to locate Nico. In addition, he had limited social media presence. Gila River covers about 580 some odd square miles, and Nico, since he grew up in the area, was very familiar with the area. It's farmland and desert, and he used that to his advantage to elude capture. As I mentioned before, he had very limited social media presence, so trying to locate him through phones, and we went up on probably 10 different phones, and each time that we got up on it, he would dump his phone, and it was a dead end. His motive was basically, he did not take the vehicles for profit. He didn't take it to sell to somebody or part them out or chop them up. It was basically for the thrill, and the vehicles, when we recovered them, were basically typically burnt and just left there on Gila River. The history behind that is that in calendar year 2019, Maricopa had 49 stolen vehicles reported out of the city of Maricopa. And 19 of those stolen vehicles that were recovered were located on Gila River. They're predominantly either a 2000 to 2007 Dodge Ram, which nine of them were recovered on Gila River, and a 1999 to 2005 Ford Super Duty, the F-250, F-350, and seven of those were recovered on Gila River. NICO had a long history of criminal activity. Detective Lochner was able to track DNA back to a 2014 case, which linked him to one incident, which went forward with a grand jury indictment. There was another incident in January 2019 where he was suspected of stealing a F-250 from the Walmart parking lot in Maricopa, where an autistic child was sleeping in the back of the vehicle. He ended up removing the child forcibly, and we later found the vehicle on Gila River. The October 30th incident where he stole the carjacked the vehicle out of the high school. And then in January, he was involved in probably four different pursuits within 5 days with Gila River. He would basically get the Gila River's officer's attention, whatever that was, and basically he was in a pursuit, and it was just for the sheer joy of having that adrenaline rush of running from the vehicles. We were able to locate, we followed up on a lead on March 26th in regards to an associate of NICO who was able, said, hey, I'll give you NICO. And we ended up serving a search warrant. On that day, we ended up having probably 60 different officers who were involved in that particular, on March 26th, with elements from not only from the DPS task force, DPS SWAT, Customs and Border Patrol with their air assets of Omaha, DPS Ranger, a Goodyear canine, that we ended up getting involved in a 45-minute pursuit, which covered the area of basically Stanfield, south of Maricopa, north onto the Gila River Reservation, where he was taken into custody. And that was an extensive time and effort that was put into it. Since the prior 3 weeks, that was all we worked on, was a bait detail, which actually we never got any hits on. It was very frustrating until we were able to stumble in that information. Another item, on April 6th, our Tucson detectives were called to assist a Pima County burglary case where two trucks were stolen from a business. The owners were able to ping the vehicles and located them near the state prison near Wilmot. Our Sergeant Todd Burson ended up locating one of the vehicles, set up on it, requested a DPS Ranger to look for the other vehicle. That truck that Todd Burson found was unoccupied. We were able to recover it. DPS Ranger located at a trailer, which was about half a mile from that location, confirmed the vehicle that was stolen. And when Pima County went to stop the vehicle, it took off and fled in pursuit. Across the desert. DPS Ranger was able to keep an overhead watch over it, followed it to the Pima Air Museum where the suspect abandoned the stolen truck, stole an ATV from the museum, rode around through the property of the Pima Air and Space Museum, and then drove it into the adjacent National Guard Armory located off of Valencia. The suspect was seen trying to get into several military vehicles and trying to start them and trying to steal them. But since those vehicles were locked and chained up, our detectives were able to take them into custody. And for brevity, I would go ahead and just close out with those two significant cases. Do we have any questions or comments? Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I don't hear of any questions or comments, so I'll be back to you.
I thought I heard somebody start to speak up. Did
I was just I was just saying really good work, a lot of hard work by all of them, so thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll second that. Any other comments?
Mr. Chairman, this is Major Jack Johnson with DPS. If you don't mind, I'd like to speak to the concerns with our fleet at this time because it's directly related to the task force and on the agenda. It's not on the agenda, but it's a task force item.
Okay, thank you.
So the fleet for the task force is a growing concern of ours, and it gets worse and worse as we go. We haven't been able to fund vehicles for quite some time. So we took a look at their fleet, and I will preface this with saying DPS has a replacement, not really a red line, but a kind of a replacement mileage of about 120,000 to replace the vehicles that we purchased for the agency. And the vehicles that we purchased for the task force are usually trucks and SUVs, just based on the nature of work they do and the responsibilities requirements to box vehicles in and have, you know, tactical considerations. What we have seen is 120,000 miles on these vehicles is about where we start having a significant amount of cost incurred to keep those vehicles rolling. So we looked at the fleet, and right now the task force has 37 vehicles in their fleet. This is down from one because we just had a vehicle with 127,000 miles go down. We had to redline it because it was going to cost close to $6,000 for us to repair, and that just it didn't make financial sense to do that. So of the 37 vehicles we have left, we have nine of those vehicles that have excess of 91,000 and are approaching 100,000 miles. We have 14 vehicles with 100,000 to 120,000 miles, and we have five vehicles that are over the 120,000 mark. What we know is 15 to 20,000 miles a year for a vehicle is not unreasonable with the amount of distance that a statewide task force is responsible for. Putting that kind of miles on is not something that we really question because we drive a lot and we drive a long way sometimes. With this in mind, we have a projection in the next year of having up to 28 of our fleet vehicles in excess of 120,000 miles, which is our mark where we want to replace those things. We requested eight vehicles in this grant request this year, and I understand, you know, the money's not there. We couldn't grant that request, and I get that. I think everybody on the board and everybody that attends these meetings realizes it's disheartening to be sitting on $6 million and not being able to fund vehicles that are in dire need. But I just want to bring to the board's attention and the Auto Theft Authority's attention and DIFI's attention that this is a real concern of ours. DPS does not have the money to start replacing this, and if we don't kind of get in some form of replacement as soon as possible, we're looking at having to replace a lot of vehicles at once, and that will come with the cost of about $1.5 million if we need to do that. SUVs and trucks we usually get for about $40,000 to $50,000 is what we buy the vehicle for. And build up in addition to that to put covert lights, siren, and a radio in there for communications is another $12,000 to $15,000 a vehicle. So that right there is an easily a $1.5 million cost if we have to do a lump sum replacement. We do our best to keep these vehicles in good condition and serviceable. We have a phenomenal fleet here at DPS that takes care of it for us, but it is a concern, and I want to bring that up, and I don't know where we go from here, if there are grant opportunities elsewhere, but I do know that DPS is not in a position to buy a bunch of vehicles for the task force.
Okay, thank you, Major. Any commentary on that?
Mr. Chairman, this is Paul Etner.
Yes, sir.
Just the last vehicles we purchased was in fiscal year 2017, and we only bought three vehicles during that time, and that's our latest. And we have two of those vehicles that are in excess right now of 50,000 out of our miles. Some of the frustration that our task force personnel is that when our vehicles go down, they have to remove all their equipment, move it into a swing vehicle, and then also then take that vehicle down, which could take one or two people off the line and off the streets for an extended period of time to swap out vehicles and move those vehicles down a fleet. And with the aging of our fleet, you know, our guys are trying their best to keep their vehicles up, but there's just things that just happen and break over time with some of these higher mileage vehicles. We have some vehicles that are approaching 160,000 miles, but it's one of those things that the longer we put off, the more the cost is going to get in regards to just not only the maintenance, but also for the replacement cost.
Thank you.
Chairman, this is Mike Solberg. I have a question. The proposed legislation that you are working with the legislators on, would that have freed up the money to fix this problem?
Or that was part of the aim of it, yeah.
Okay, all right. So, I think obviously if we just keep trying to hammer at that once legislation gets proposed in the winter, do our best to allocate the money. Mentioned it's frustrating that it's there but you can't touch it, so we're back. It's going to be interesting.
Chief, I actually have a couple of ideas about this, and I'm wondering if we might be able to talk and maybe even hold another law enforcement subcommittee meeting on this topic and maybe flesh some things out.
Yep, open to that.
Any other commentary? Okay, with that, I'll go ahead and move on to a call to the public. Is there anybody on the phone or in person that has anything they'd like to discuss? Okay, I don't hear anything. With some current events, I have a personal note. I've put in my notice with my company to retire. My last date in the office will be July 31st. So I've spoken with the executive director to kind of see what the ramifications of those are. So more to come on that, but there may be a change in the board in the near future. Any other reports on current events? I don't hear any. So do I have a motion to adjourn?
Mr. Reed, can we make sure that somebody didn't join us while the meeting was going? I just want to make sure I got all of our guests recorded.
Okay. You might have noticed that I switched over from my cell phone to my computer, so if you noticed a change up, that might have been one of them.
Okay.
Do we have anybody else that joined during the course of the meeting?
Sheriff
Dunning
said he was there.
Mm-hmm. I don't hear any
yet. Okay, good deal.
Okay, thank you. Motion to adjourn?
So moved, Mike.
Second,
Robert.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We're adjourned. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Matt Reed is retiring. Wow. He's just tired of it, or?
I don't know. He didn't go into that thing about what the reasons were. He just said he and his wife thought it was the right time. So he is interested in staying on the board, maybe to fill Joe Brocious's potential public member. Yeah. So I don't know if we could. That. It seems like it could be an easy transition since he's already approved and vetted.
I know. And then we have to find another insurance person. Does Matt have anyone that he's recommending from State Farm?
Yeah, I didn't ask him about that.
Boards and commissions, here we come. Okay. All right.
Insurance industry, right?
Mm-hmm. He and Brian Wright are the two.
Okay.